I'm joined by Robin Sherborne, freelance economist. You delivered your State of the Economy. What were some of the pertinent issues or highlights that came out?
Okay, well, I've been giving an annual lecture on the state of the economy for 3 years now. This is my third one. So I always want to track what's happening in the economy, looking back, what's happened, what are the important issues, looking at the data, looking at the economic indicators, and then looking forward, what's likely to happen in the coming year. Now, of course, this year, we're in a very special year because we have elections later in the year, once every 5 years, as always. And the question I was asking was essentially, is it the economy, stupid? There's this phrase that came out of the American elections in 1992, where James Carville, strategy advisor to Bill Clinton, said on TV, it's the economy, stupid. And what he meant by that, not that everyone's stupid, but he's saying that the state of the economy is the prime determinant of how people vote. People vote based on how well off they are, how they think the government's managing the economy, whether they're creating new jobs for people, whether they're earning more than they were 5 years ago. And so my question was really, does this also apply in Namibia? And then I went on to look at Namibian indicators and look at the fact that we've actually had quite a special period since President Geingob came to office in 2015. For the first time, the economy has really stopped growing altogether. And in fact, average incomes, because the population is still growing, and in fact, it's growing much faster than we thought it was, according to the new population census figures, average incomes have actually declined. So after these 2 terms in office, it'll be the first time we're going into elections in Namibia where people's average incomes are lower than they were at the beginning of the 2 terms of office. And so I was just asking, will this affect the outcome of the election? Will this affect how people vote? In the past, the economy's been growing, per capita incomes have been growing. This phase has been different for the last 10 years.
Wow, that's interesting.
It is very interesting.
Very interesting.
And then you look at other things like the Afrobarometer survey, which was conducted earlier this year, and you see there is there's contradictory evidence there. It still shows SWAPO, the ruling governing party, you know, with a majority, a small majority, over 50% of people are saying they're going to vote SWAPO. Small numbers saying they're going to vote for the opposition parties. I'm not looking particularly at party politics in this presentation. But one of the interesting things that struck me was that when you ask people about how well or badly government has been managing the economy of the country, over 2/3 of people saying they've been managing it badly. So that corresponds to the growth and the per capita growth figures that I was showing. So there's a sort of correlation here between what's actually happening in the economy according to the official statistics and what people's views of what's happening in the economy are.
Yes.
So I was really raising that issue and I was trying to stimulate the audience and ask them, well, why do they think what's happened has happened? And of course, my big answer is that we've really failed to capitalise on a huge opportunity in 2015, which is president coming in with a very strong mandate, 87% of the vote, and him being in a position where he could really implement quite radical reform in the economy and pursue new policies, which would be to the long-term benefit of the country. I'm arguing that we missed that opportunity, essentially, and we're still floundering around in all sorts of ways on putting together the basic investment framework for these potentially huge amounts of investment that are now going to come into the country. We're on the verge of a whole new phase of development in Namibia. We've started to develop green hydrogen as a brand new industry, which is exciting. And we've also struck oil and gas off the coast of Namibia, quite significant reserves. We could potentially become a major oil and gas producer. But all that's going to be financed essentially by foreign direct investment. And the question is, will these guys come and invest if the rules are not clear for them? And my argument is we should have these rules clear before the money starts flowing in. Otherwise, we'll get into trouble. That's the sort of the long and the short of it. There are lots of other things we can talk about. I touched on other issues in the presentation, but that was basically the thrust of my argument. So I just leave the question open at the end of the presentation. Will people vote on the basis of that rather poor economic performance that we've seen over the last 10 years? Now, of course, I must add, this isn't just about government policy, although I still believe government policy is the most important thing in the long term. We've had a huge hit from COVID. That was a global phenomenon. We've had as the global economy came out of COVID, there were all sorts of supply problems which pushed prices up. And then, of course, we've had Russia's full-scale invasion of Ukraine, which had a huge impact, not only on energy prices, but on grain prices and other prices in the world. So we've had this very disrupted period, essentially since 2020, which the world economy is only just now recovering from, including our economy here. Interest rates are only now starting to slowly edge downwards after going up to combat inflation.
Yeah. Do you agree that we are starting to bounce back?
We're starting to grow again after the dip from COVID. The economy's bounced back. I argue yesterday, based on the data, that we're pretty much fully recovered. Even the tourist industry is almost back to where it was, possibly a little bit further than it was in 2019. So the economy's growing, but it's growing by relatively small amounts, and it's not growing enough to sort of absorb the labour that is available out there. We're not creating businesses that employ lots of people and therefore help spread new incomes around and very low-income people. So that's what we're failing to do. And in fact, we haven't even measured employment and unemployment officially since 2018. It's almost as if we don't want to know what the employment picture is. My sense is that it's pretty bad. We haven't created new jobs outside the public sector. And the question is, how do you manage an economy, a modern economy, where lots of things are going on if you don't have the data to know what's really going on?
Yes. We just spoke about the oil and gas sector. So oil and gas development and new sectors are on everyone's radar currently. Can we expect the impact that we see the public expecting from us in the future?
Well, oil and gas is very exciting, and the fines have been quite significant. These are huge fines of oil and gas offshore. But the question is, the world as a whole is aiming towards net zero carbon emissions by 2050. That means to say we have to wean ourselves off fossil fuels. The EIA, or the IEA, the International Energy Authority, published a very important report in 2021, which essentially said, if we want to meet this target globally, we can't basically exploit any new oil and gas reserves, because all that oil and gas will then be burnt and contribute to global emissions. But we're, of course, in Namibia, we're deciding to go ahead and exploit these reserves. But I think the door is closing on this opportunity. There'll come a stage in the next 5, possibly 10 years, where it'll be very difficult, impossible to finance these new oil and gas projects. So we're a little bit up against the clock in terms of, if we want to exploit these resources, we have to do it fairly quickly. Now, I was at the oil and gas conference and I heard Magashino, the petroleum commissioner, say that she expected a final investment decision on the first of these wells by next year. So you can imagine we have elections at the end of this year. We have a new cabinet in place probably by March next year.
Yes.
Able to take decisions, hopefully able to put that long-term investment framework in place, reassuring these big foreign investors, and then them going ahead and making their foreign investment final investment decisions later in the year after quarter one. And that's when we'll know, is this thing for real, or is it just we know there's lots of stuff out there, but no one's going to exploit it. So the coming year is going to be very, very exciting.
Interesting.
Yes. But don't get too excited, because there are a number of challenges, of course. There are the technical challenges of the resources themselves. These are hundreds of kilometres offshore, very deep below water and right below the ocean floor. Getting that out and dealing with the gas that comes with it and linking all these projects up in a sensible way, and then maybe linking it up to the Kudu gas field and all the rest of it, is going to be a very complicated process. We have to get it right, and we have to get it right for the long-term future of the country. And we also then have to manage the revenues that accrue from that. Now, that will take a little bit of time. The companies will want to recoup their investments first before they start paying a lot of tax. But certainly by the mid-2030s, it's possible that government will be getting very significant revenues from this resource. And we have to ask ourselves, what's the best way of managing those revenues? Do we pump it all into the local economy? Do we hand it out to the population? Do we invest it for the future? Do we put it into new industries? There are all sorts of questions that raises. And I just would say that, and ministers here are more than aware of this. I was at the oil and gas conference, as I told you, and there was a lot of talk of this. There's something called the resource curse, which is the paradox that countries can have lots of resources, oil and gas, for example, and yet they still don't seem to make the best of it. Their people still live in poverty for all sorts of reasons, whether it's corruption, whether it's economic mismanagement, whether it's the exchange rate effects of these discoveries. There are all sorts of economic effects that they have. And we need to learn the lessons from other countries, both the success stories and the failures, in order to manage our resources well. It's not a done deal that just because we have oil and gas offshore, we're all suddenly going to be millionaires in Namibia in 10 years' time. Not at all. It very much depends on how we manage that resource.
Yes. What are your thoughts on the green hydrogen?
Well, green hydrogen, I think, is an exciting development, but it's possibly not the development that it's being made out to be. I think there will be, you know, we're at the experimental stage at the moment. There are a few pilot projects which are getting off the ground, quite exciting. There's the Cleanergy project outside Walvis Bay. There's the Dowrah's project, and there's the High Iron project. So things are actually starting to happen now. It's not just talk and conferences and plans and things. So we can start to see the results. But the question is, can you produce green hydrogen at scale in this country at a cost that is commercially viable? So, you know, engineers can do amazing things, they can build amazing things, but can you build it in a way that generates a fuel that people are able to afford? If the price of green hydrogen is too high, Namibians and even export markets won't be able to afford it. So the question is, can it be done?
Mr. Shearborn, thank you so much for joining us.
Pleasure.